Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, sponsored by WebSpy. It's November 16, 2009, and this is episode 217. This week is the second of a two-part series where we go back to basics. Last week we looked at exposure and depth of field, amongst other things, and this week we're going to look at some basic composition techniques. Before we go on to the main topic, I'd like to thank WebSpy, our sponsors. WebSpy are internet monitoring, analysis and reporting specialists, and as usual I'd like to ask you to tweet the message thanks to @WebSpy for sponsoring the @MartinBaileyPhotography podcast on Twitter to show your support. To find out more about WebSpy and their products, go to webspy.com/MBP and use the discount code MBPWSY for a 10% discount on anything that you buy. Okay, so last week we started this two-part series to update a five-year-old forum post on the fundamentals of photography, which was revived by Chua Kim Yu from Montreal, Canada. Thanks again to Chua for reviving that thread, and I hope that you're enjoying these podcasts. If you're just tuning in for the first time and didn't catch the first episode, it's not essential to listen to these in order, but if you really are just starting out and looking for some basic tips, we will be building on last week to a degree, so it might be better to go back and listen to episode 216 first. It turns out, once again, that as I prepared for this week, I ended up writing about twice as much as I can fit into one week's episode. So we're going to finish up with basics today, but I'll be releasing a sort of next steps episode post probably in 2 weeks' time, so stay tuned for that. So today we're going to really concentrate on lots of various compositional techniques, and I'm going to call this really the composition toolbox. As we know, in art, as with most things, rules are made to be broken, and in fact, some of the things that we even call rules, like the rule of thirds, that we'll discuss shortly, aren't really rules at all. They're guidelines that you can think of as tools to keep in your toolbox and pull out from time to time when making images. I often find that when I come across a good subject that I want to make a photograph of, I'll work through a number of compositional possibilities before I move on. Sometimes I know instantly how I want to shoot it and nail it straight away, but even then, there's always another angle or another way to frame the subject, so experimenting and working a subject or a scene is a great way to improve your photography and your photographs. So, although this is not a comprehensive list of compositional guidelines, here are a number of things to keep in mind when shooting, or, as I say, a few tools for your compositional toolbox. Okay, so rather than something to do, the first thing that I want to tell you about is what not to do. And almost always you'll want to avoid composing your shot with the subject smack bang in the middle of the frame. Beginners tend to photograph people with their face in the middle of the frame, for example, with lots of dead space above their head. This is often the most uninteresting compositional style. Our eye is drawn to the center of the frame and may not escape from there, so we don't feel involved with the image. Our eyes don't explore it at all, you know, it just stops there. The confusing thing is that sometimes it will work, as I believe it does in image 2366, for example. So don't totally remove this from your toolbox, but most of the time avoid the bullseye composition. The rule of thirds is always a good place to start when deciding how to compose your shot and avoid the bullseye composition. As in the example that I have on the blog and in the enhanced podcast at the moment, imagine that you draw a line one third into the frame from the left and then one third in from the right, and then one from the top and the bottom. And if you put your main subject or elements, you know, the interesting elements of your image along these lines or at any of the four intersections, your composition will be worlds better than placing the subject in the center of the frame. You can see in the image that we that I've put up as an example, and I've drawn the four lines on, and that I have the equinox flower to the left, perfectly in line with the left third, the top to bottom third. And also that line runs directly through the middle of the tree trunk. And then, the equinox flower head itself is slightly above the line. But then if you look, I also aligned the line of flowers, or that other line of interest there, along the top horizontal third. So you can basically see how I used this without even seeing this in the frame as I made the image. I used the rule of thirds to compose this shot. Bear in mind that this is an old and proven concept. Artists for centuries have used the rule of thirds as a compositional guide. According to Wikipedia, the rule of thirds appears as early as 1797 as a rule for proportion in scenic paintings. How you place the elements in your image will change the story that you tell. Generally, if a person is facing the left, you'll want to put them on the right third line to give them space to look into. This is a safe and comfortable composition. You can create a sense of drama by, putting them on the left third so that they're looking straight out or moving out of the frame, with a little, only a little bit of space between the person and the edge of the frame for them to look into. And this is going to be much more dramatic and makes the viewer wonder what the person's looking at. It could make us feel as though the subject were troubled or deep in thought. With lots of room behind them, we might wonder what they're trying to leave behind. In landscape photography, the horizon should almost never be along the center of the image unless you're trying to create a mirror effect or balance the elements of the image in some other way. Again, it will be much safer to put the horizon along the bottom or the top third, or say if you have a lone tree, it might work in the it could work in the middle of the shot, but putting it on the left or right third will likely be a more pleasing composition in most situations. Also, remember to keep your horizon straight. A wonky horizon can be very disconcerting, unless it's obviously intentionally wonky. A spirit level that goes in the flash hot shoe on top of your camera can help. And many newer DSLRs actually have built-in levels, so make use of these to keep your horizon straight. In image number 2200, you'll see that I positioned the mountain very close to the top of the frame. You could argue that the tip of the mountain nears the bottom third line, but that's not quite, what we're thinking about here. The bulk of the mountain is very close to the bottom of the frame. What I did here was just took the rule of thirds and broke it. All of these rules of composition are more like guidelines to help you rather than rules. So experiment, have fun, and break the rules as much as you like and see what you get. You'll also note in this image that there's a lot of what we call negative space above the mountain. Apart from the tiny bit of dark cloud in the top right, the blue sky is almost featureless, but it adds a lot to this image in my opinion. When I see this image, I actually feel my eye like coming off the mountain and drifting upwards into the negative space, giving me an even greater feeling of the scale of things than another shot of this mountain that I made with little space above the mountain. Another example of negative space might be image number 1177. Here we have a silhouette of an archway, which is one of the entrances to the grounds of the Taj Mahal in India. We can't actually see the archway because it's totally black, negative space. But because of the shape it forms, framing the image, we can tell that there's a stone archway there all the same. Finding lines into your scene or landscape can help lead the eye into the shot, sometimes even towards a small feature that might not be noticed without the leading lines. In image 1549, the river leads the eye into the image, and although our eye initially stops at the cloud bank to explore the detail that we have there, that sort of gets us close enough to the top of the image to make us peek over the clouds and find Mount Fuji in the distant background. Image 2396 looks like a lot like the eye of a reptile or Godzilla, but in fact, it's a knot in a burnt tree trunk. It was basically something that I found in the ashes of a campfire. So look for things that, when framed right, will look like something else, and this can also lead to eye-catching images. Image 2392 has two definite layers of interest, the first being the foreground tree in its yellow and red autumnal colours, and the second is the waterfall in the background. You could also say that there's a third layer in the woods behind the falls. Adding too many points of interest to an image can overcomplicate and ruin an image, but adding two or three complementary elements juxtaposed like this in layers can be quite effective. More than two of the same thing is repetition. Repeating elements can be a strong form of composition. I'd say that three is about the minimum that you can work with, as with these three sets of leaves in image number 2390. But often with repeating patterns, more is actually more. Look for contrasting colours such as red and green, or bright colours against a dull background or, you know, dark background. Most of the things that I'm mentioning today I have podcasted about in the past. I did an episode on contrasting colours way back in episode 31 when I kicked off with still my best example of this, in my opinion, which is an old image as well, image number 56. Here we see a bright orange poppy against a patch of baby blue eyes flowers. I also discussed the colour wheel that I placed on my website as a tool to experiment with this. But if you basically, I mean, I'll put a link to this on the blog, but if you select two colours in a colour wheel, you'll see that, actually, what I should say is select the two colours that we see on this image, the orange and the blue, on the colour wheel, and you'll see that they sit exactly opposite each other. So there's a reason why we find this contrast in colours pleasing. Colours separated by one third on the wheel work as well. Just look for contrasting colours or bright colours against dark backgrounds, etc., and you'll be onto a winner. So let's talk about perspective. Your choice of lenses basically change the way the scene looks in your photograph. If you use a wide angle lens, say between 10 and 24 millimeters, and get in close to your subject, you'll get a very different perspective than you would, say, of the same subject from much further away with a 100 millimeter or maybe even a 200 millimeter lens. This can be difficult to grasp at first, but it's easy to see what I mean with a little experiment. If you have a standard zoom, say an 18 to 55 or a 24 to 70, then shoot the same subject first with the widest focal length, 18 or 24, using these same examples, and then zoom to 55 or 70 millimeters. And move away from your subject until the subject is roughly the same size in the frame as it was with your wide settings. And if you have an even longer lens, say up to 200, try that as well. You know, just keep moving away from your subject. Keep the subject the same size in the frame while you move away. And then what you'll notice is, you know, doing this will help you to see that the focal length really does have an effect on your image's perspective. Also note that wide-angle lenses tend to make elements in your scene look further away from each other. If you photograph a person, for example, standing in front of a building, the building will look much smaller or much further away from the subject with a wide-angle lens than it would do with a long telephoto lens. The longer the lens, the more you'll get a stacking effect like the mountains that we can see in image number 827. You can see how all the mountains in the foreground all seem to be stacked up on top of each other in layers. That is because I shot this image with a focal length of 135mm. You can also use perspective to effect, as I have in image number 2353. You can see here that if you use a wide-angle lens and point it up at tall buildings, the building will appear to be sort of falling in on you, and this can give quite a dramatic effect. So don't shoot everything standing up and, you know, with the subject at eye level, at your eye level. When shooting small children or pets, kneel down or lie down on the ground to get to their eye level, or even to sort of look up at them. Try shooting trees or buildings from low perspectives. Try shooting down into a valley from a mountain or across a city from a tall building. Shooting from above or below your scene is fun and helps you to get great images. As with the last image that we looked at, be sure to look up and down as well while you're out and about. You only notice scenes like, image 2308, for example, by looking up into the tree canopy. Without looking up and down into the undergrowth, for that matter, you might miss a lot of great photographic opportunities. You also need to watch your background and your backgrounds of your image and the edges of the frame. It's very easy when you find a great subject to concentrate so much on that subject that you forget to look at the other elements in the image. Do keep your eyes out for things like lampposts or trees in the distance that can appear to be sticking out of people's heads. Also, even when you are using a shallow depth of field to make the foreground and the background sort of out of focus, you still need to look out for what's in the blurry areas or the bokeh. If you have patches of color or bright or dark spots in the blur, then you need to make sure that these are not only, not distracting or, distract from your main subject, but as you learn to use them, they can actually be used to enhance your main subject. You also want to keep your eyes on the edges of your frame, especially with beginner or mid-range cameras that typically don't allow you to see the outer 5% of the photograph through the viewfinder. Be aware of what's creeping into the edges. If you are using a zoom lens, zoom out to check around the edges before zooming back in again. If you are shooting handheld, and then you can just wiggle the camera around a little bit just so that you can see if there's anything unwanted that's too close for comfort. And use a tripod whenever possible. I know that when you first start out and the thought of using a tripod can be a bit daunting, but this will improve your images more than anything else that you can do. This is not just because it holds the camera steady, but because when you use a tripod, you think about the composition more. You take your time and you think about the whole process, a lot more. Using a tripod is not always practical. Some fast-paced shooting, like some sports and some wildlife photography, as well as fast-paced portraiture even, will be much easier without a tripod. It's your call. But my rule of thumb and guidance to you is to use a tripod unless there's a reason not to. There's a tendency these days as well to be sloppy in the field, basically because you can fix pretty much any many errors in exposure or compensation in Photoshop by adjusting the exposure, cropping, rotating. You can always clone stuff out later as well. And granted, you can do a lot in Photoshop, but it all takes time, and you will never develop good photography skills if you're sloppy in the field. Remember that when you have to save highlights or shadows in post-processing, you're never going to get quite as good an image as you would if you nailed it in the field, and it just feels better. I have nothing against Photoshop, and I do save the odd photo myself, but I always make that a last resort. I'd much rather hold my head high and say that I feel I'm a good photographer than that I'm good in Photoshop. So in closing, although I'll do a follow-up with some next steps advice in a few weeks, I'd like to leave you with a few thoughts from these sort of two back to basics episodes. Photography is both technical and artistic. Remember that you need to be at once both left and right-brained. This comes easy to some people and not so easy to others. Whichever you are, please don't lose sight of the fact that photography is supposed to be fun. By all means, spend time on the internet, in forums, reading books and magazines, and view a lot of other people's images. It will all help. But the single most important thing for improving your photography is photography. Shoot as much as you can and look at your resulting images. And if you like what you see, think about how you achieved that result and repeat it. If you don't like what you see, check the shooting data and recall what you did in the field and try to learn from it so as not to repeat it. Really though, you have to enjoy yourself. If you get so caught up in trying to figure out all of the details before you really get started, you'll be getting in your own way, and that's not going to be a good thing. So thanks again to Chua for reviving that old thread and prompting these two episodes. It's been a lot of fun to do this, and hopefully you and many others will find it useful too. That does it for today though. Thanks for listening, and remember that you can find me on Twitter, Flickr, Facebook, as well as my blog and the photography forum. I should mention as well that yesterday I stopped the voting for the October assignment on 50mm only. And we have the three winners, and I've posted them, their names in the blog. So do check out the blog at martinbaileyphotography.com. Sorry, it's the forum at martinbaileyphotography.com to see who won. And we're sort of rounding up some backstories, and we'll be doing that next week and taking a look at the winning images. Thanks once again to our sponsors, WebSpy, the Internet Monitoring, Analysis and Reporting Specialist. Don't forget to go over to webspy.com/MVP and get that 10% discount on anything that you buy with the discount code MBPWSY. I'll be back next week though with another episode of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, and until then, you just have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye bye. The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a proud member of the Photocast Network. Find this and other great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.